That's yeah, cool. That's really right. The goal. So it's, everybody started early this morning. So we are here with the Town of Hilton Head podcast, part two. You didn't think we were going to make it to a second episode, but we did. So we got renewed for another one. And a lot of people were a little tired on this table, I believe, from an early start this morning. I'm Director of Marketing Communications, Andrew Davis from the town. We've got Town Manager Mark Orlando, the Mayor Alan Perry, and our special guest today, Andrew Carmines from Hudson Seafood over here.
Hey, everybody.
Congratulations. You are our first guest, so you're our guinea pig, too, Andrew, at the same time.
I love it. I'm happy to be here. Honored to be here. It's a really cool format, and I think it's really good for a lot of people in the area to be able to connect with town leaders and people in the community.
So. Well, we'll talk a little bit about why you're so tired in a few minutes, but wanted to start a little bit, since we are taping this on the Wednesday, Al Roker here this morning out at Ligny Beach, and you guys were there too. Talk to me a little bit about your experience with Al Roker this morning.
Well, first of all, what a great guy. You know, he was so pleasurable, so nice for him to come in and bring his crew in, right, to showcase Hilton Head and in his February walk month here on Hilton Head. That was awesome. So it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was great. It was great to see. There was a lot of people down there too. Yeah. You know, behind him, around him, surrounding him. We got down there early and just pretty much took over Caligny. So he's great, but the whole team was great, including the chamber staff that pulled him in and put all that together.
That behind the scenes is kind of fun to see how many people are involved in something like that, isn't it?
So. Yeah, you've got his security detail. You've got, you know, all the camera, the mics, and the drone flyer and the kite flyer, and you got everybody.
Yeah, when we did the Today Show, what was it, a year ago or 2 years ago, something like that, it was amazing to see how much production goes into that. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I did realize about Al and the other guys on the show is they earn every penny that they make. As soon as that camera goes off, everybody's like on them, you know, shaking hands, selfies, all that. So it was a pretty cool experience to see that, and just how many people and how much food and how much production goes into 1 hour of television.
It's amazing. You think it's a 2 minute segment or something.
Exactly.
They did with you, and they probably spent 2 hours with you and all this food and all these things.
Crazy how many people, local people were involved, caterers, you know, limo drivers. It was just amazing to see. So.
Wait a minute. I didn't have a limo. Did you have a limo?
I had a limo.
Yeah, I had a limo.
You did?
I had a limo.
Yeah, Mark got one. You missed the memo somewhere. Okay. So you were in the limo with Mark.
If you need a ride, you just call me. I'll come pick you up anytime you need a ride.
I rode in Andrew's limo.
It's my own personal, you know. So no boats could get there, unfortunately, Andrew. You got the other side of things. That would have been a hard run on the beach to get you there.
Yeah, it would have been a rough day for that today, for
would've
sure.
Been. Yeah, it would have been. Yeah.
But we brought Andrew in, you know, the environmental side of things, of course, and the food side. You didn't bring any with you, which we're a little bummed out by.
Yeah,
you know,
somebody said something about bringing a dozen oysters.
I got nothing over here.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, I thought it might get a little messy in here.
Well, that's the end of our podcast. So, you know, Andrew, I looked back at some of your background here just to sort of kick it off. I was interested in the stories about the family and your family starting this here on Hilton Head Island and the business side, at least, to start, because you've got so much more now going on beyond the restaurant, but the restaurant's where it all began.
Yes, I've gotten really good at compartmentalizing all of these things. But my folks came down, like a lot of people do, on vacation in 1975. My mom and dad were at a cocktail party in Sea Pines, and they heard that there was a fish camp on the north end of the island that was for sale, potentially for sale. And my dad kind of, you know, brushed it off, but he kind of was piqued a little bit. But then he went back to his office and he came out of a board meeting and somebody mentioned a fish camp on Hilton Head that was for sale. And he thought that was too coincidental and looked into it, investigated. And ultimately they made a deal with Benny Hudson and they've had the place since.
Pretty incredible. I like some of the stories you had first. You said you were born into the dad delivered you on the front seat of his pickup truck. Is that how?
That's
how
very true. So I'll tell you the story as it was relayed to me. So at the time we were living in the little office across the parking lot from the restaurant. You know, our administrative office is an old house. We were living there at the time. This is 3 years after my parents bought the restaurant. And my mom was in the house. I was 3 weeks premature, but she called my dad, who was working in the restaurant, and she said, "Brian, this baby's coming. I need you to come over here and get me." And he's like, "Nah, it's not. You're having contractions, whatever it is." And finally, my mom called him back over and said, "You need to come over here." So he went, walked over there and pulled his truck up, and Dodge pickup truck, and she got in the front seat. They were off. But, you know, they didn't have a maternity ward on Hilton Head at the time, so if you wanted to have a baby in the hospital, you had to drive to Beaufort. And so on the way to Beaufort, we get to the base of the Paris Island Bridge, and my mom says, "You need to stop the car. This baby's coming." And my dad pulled the car over and delivered me on the front seat of the truck. Then the story goes that we got to the hospital after the police escort and all that, and my dad was so freaked out that they took he and I into the hospital and left my mom sitting in a wheelchair in the rain. But, you know, these stories tend to evolve over time. But as I've gotten older, I've found out that a lot of these stories that my dad's telling me are actually true.
Wow.
Which is crazy. You know, I always thought he was embellishing stuff. And then I hear from other people the actual story. And I'm like, wow, that was actually
That's pretty cool. I mean, I've known him since he was born, and I've never heard that story.
A lot of people haven't heard that story. A lot of people haven't heard that
That's
story.
That's what's fun.
I think it's a PTSD. My dad's afraid of what it is.
True.
Yours, your dad's, or your mom's? Which one?
Right, I think my dad was the one that was really
freaked
out.
Your mom had it initially, but I can only imagine what it looked like getting back in that house afterwards.
Yeah, I'll say an instant full or a really cool full circle moment, too. And I won't share who the OBGYN was. She's no longer doing that anymore. But when my wife was giving birth to my second daughter, Millie, my middle child, she's now 10. The OBGYN was segueing out of the OBGYN field and getting into like vaginal reconstruction surgery or something like that. I mean, whatever. But she was really sweet, really free-spirited, really cool lady. I won't tell your name. And I was kind of joking around before we got to business, and I had, you know, I said, hey, doc, you know, when are we going to do this thing? When are we going to deliver this baby? And she said, do you want to deliver the baby? And I said, yeah, I do. And she let me deliver Millie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
That is cool.
That's great.
But, you know, my joking around got real serious real quick. When she said, yes, let's get your scrubs on, my face got very hot.
Wow.
Very quickly. But I did it, and it was one of the coolest experiences.
I bet.
And then your wife said by the last one, no, let's let the doctors do it this time.
I didn't want anything to do with it. I didn't want anything to do with it.
That's one time thing.
No, with Oak, I didn't want anything to do with it. And we didn't know what we were having with Oak. You know, one of the last great surprises, we found out with the first two, and we were convinced we were having a girl, obviously. You know, you have two girls, and you just say, well, obviously it's going to be another girl, right? And when Oak came out, the nurses had to be like, look, you did not win a NASCAR race. You just had a child, so calm down. It's a hospital. So, yeah, it was really fun. I mean, we had a blast with it. And threw the Hail Mary up and ended up with the baby boy. So, yeah, we had two girls and one boy.
Very cool. Yeah. So, well, for you, some of the other side, that environmental side, aside from as you were having your family and starting that process, was getting into the shrimping business and getting into the environmental side of things. I like stories that you talk about when that first time you went out on the boat itself in a shrimp boat.
Yeah. Well, my uncle was a shrimper. So I don't know. A lot of people don't know this, but my cousin, Christopher, has a very successful business in Bluffton called May River Excursions. And a lot of people know him and know me, but don't know that we're related. So, yeah, that is my first cousin. That's my mom's sister's son. You know, when my parents bought the restaurant, they really leveraged literally everything they had and borrowed everything they could. And basically my mom's five sisters and her brother and my dad's dad and his stepmom and my mom's parents, everybody moved down here. And it was like a real family group effort. And so, but anyway, my uncle Stephen was a shrimper, had a boat called the Jason that docked at the restaurant back in the 80s. And I went out on the boat one time, and it gave me an everlasting appreciation for how hard it is to make a living doing that. I mean, I think we were out for 4 days. It's 95 degrees during the day. I remember I got so seasick one day, and one of the strikers wanted to joke around with me, and they served dinner, and they told me it was fried seagull. And you can imagine what my reaction was after being seasick for a whole day. It was actually fried chicken, but it was an experience. I have not spent a lot of time on the shrimp boats, but I really do respect those guys. You know, the most amazing thing about what those guys do is you will never see a mechanic, a maintenance person, anybody doing anything on those boats. Those guys do almost everything. The only thing that you'll see once in a while is they have a really high-tech refrigeration on those boats now. Mm-hmm. The only time you'll ever see somebody is if it's one of these guys working on those. But they do all the net mending, all the winch work, all the motor work. It's pretty incredible.
That's what happens at Town Hall, too. These guys fix all the conditioning systems. Yeah, exactly. Mark really walks around with a tool belt the whole time, not this town manager
game. I've heard hands-on.
That's why I teach down all the time.
Very hands-on. I think that's what people are surprised about, too, when we just show up to a restaurant and you see a shrimp boat with nets and a name on the side. Just really realizing how authentic, how real it is. It's commercial fishing straight out into our waters, right? Our pristine waterways, which is why we're so focused on the quality of our water, the quality of our environment. Because if that slips,
it's so important.
We're ordering food from somewhere. We're getting it straight from
Yeah.
Straight from the ocean, straight from the rivers, right in our backyards.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't realize what an amazing nursery we have here. You know, we have no freshwater tributaries in southern Beaufort County, so our salinity doesn't change, and that creates a super stable environment for a lot of aquatic species as a nursery. It's incredible. But, yeah, we bought, I think, off of Jeff. So a lot of people don't know this. Jeff and Skip Toomer are second-generation shrimpers. They own two of the boats that dock at the restaurant. There's Jeff's son, Logan, who's 22, is now operating the third boat, which is incredible. And we bought about 125,000 pounds of shrimp off those boats last year.
That's incredible.
So it's a real group effort, and it's a really great partnership. You know, we're able to, because we're a restaurant, we're able to pay them a premium for that product, and that keeps them thriving and happy and keeps the restaurant in the best shrimp on the planet. So.
Yeah, and some of the best meals on the planet. I mean, you know, fresh, right there from your own docks.
Yeah.
I mean, you're one of a kind in the area. I mean, it's so spectacular.
Yeah, well, what's amazing is my mom and dad kind of paved the way. You know, they started with the shrimp way back when, and that was kind of the bedrock of the restaurant. And when I realized over the course of growing up how powerful that was as an item, you know, just when you have a shrimp that comes right off the boat and it's being served hours later, it's almost the same reaction every time, no matter who the customer. This is the best blank I've ever had.
Yeah.
And I realized that once I got back here in 2006 to help out from a management perspective, I realized that if we could climb the supply chain in other areas, that response and that reaction would be the same regardless of what that item was, whether it be an oyster or a clam or a soft shell crab. And so I got obsessed with trying to just find a way to get that seafood on the plate hours as opposed to days after harvest. Right. And it's been a challenge, but I wouldn't have it any other way. I mean, I love that, seeing that reaction. I was serving oysters off the farm this afternoon at the restaurant, and I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm pretty lucky, though. I mean, really, like, I've created this world in which I get to eat something fresh off the boat almost every day.
Yeah.
And I do at 11 o'clock every day. And then the customers have started to come in and say, what did you eat for lunch today?
Yeah. You know, just put it up on the board.
This is what Andrew ate. Andrew ate this.
Andrew's choice.
Yeah,
but it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of work, though. I mean, you know, especially with stuff like the oyster farm, you know, we started that in 15. And, you know, immediately right off the rip, 16, we had Hurricane Matthew. 17, we had Irma. And then, you know, we had a little success after that. But, God, I mean, I was so heartbroken that the success seemed like a failure. And then, sure enough, during the pandemic, this guy, Doug Rogers, walks onto the dock. And I'm out there, just cooked a batch of she-crab soup. And, you know, we're, you know, basically doing only takeout. And he says, you know, I'm in the same boat. I've been growing oysters in Long Island for 20 years. And my business was selling direct to restaurants in Manhattan. Well, now I'm selling door to door, trying to sell product to individuals, and it's just not working. Do you have any need for a partner? And I said, yes, you're hired, 100%.
Wow.
And it's been an awesome, awesome relationship. He's got a great family. They live out in Bluffton. And he's been just a godsend because he's made all the mistakes. Right. So I don't have to do the trial and error, which I was doing. And he's, you know, he's got a great work ethic, and he's just brought a wealth of knowledge. And now, you know, we have 350,000 oysters growing on the farm out there, and 500,000 clams, and had them at the restaurant today. It's spotty yet. We got some that, you know, the water's been really cold, so the oysters haven't grown a ton super fast. So,
is starting to thrive. You talked to me about this a year ago when we had lunch.
Yeah. Yeah,
wow, this is great. It's going.
I mean, we're waiting on some permits from the Army Corps, but once we get those, we'll be able to really scale the oyster side. And we want to get up to, you know, I never had a desire to scale the oyster business. I just wanted to have enough to serve at the restaurant. You know, that was good for me. I never got in it to get rich or anything.
Was that the goal initially, just to fill up the sort of coffers at the restaurant and say, well, let's do this because it's easier for me to do it than
someone
else?
I think the goal was, one, we're not depriving, we're not taking the natural resource. So we're not out there picking oysters that are filtering our water. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's one. So every oyster that we serve, we feel like we're saving at least one wild oyster, maybe two, because of the culling in place and all that. The second reason is I wanted to be able to go out in the morning and pick oysters for lunch service and go out in the afternoon and pick oysters for dinner service. I wanted people to have the experience mm-hmm. that I get when I go out and pick an oyster and shuck it right, right. out of the water.
But if you got 350,000 oysters and they filter 50 gallons a day,
yeah.
so you're adding to the you know the cleanliness of the water, it's just growing.
Totally, totally. Yeah, you know, incredible. And the, what I want to do is I've been talking with some people from USCB, is I want to do, you know, water quality studies
right.
on the farm
right.
and then, you know, 500 yards away, right. a mile away, and see what that, what kind of benefit that's having. And, you know, imagine we're doing 350,000 oysters now. Imagine when we're doing 2 million.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
that could be really great. And but it's been a really neat learning experience. But also, I mean, it's farming. And there's some mornings where you wake up mm-hmm. and you've got butterflies in your stomach because you got a hurricane barreling down,
well,
you know, so.
Right.
Well, even you mentioned the younger Toomer family member, mm-hmm. next generation.
Totally.
Next generation business model for oysters as well. So mm-hmm. what a fabulous, I always wonder about that. You know, at what point does that generation not dive in to be a commercial fisher on Hilton Head Island?
Right? Well, when they don't make enough money.
Right.
And that mm-hmm. could potentially happen. So when COVID was going on, imports were very slow and very expensive.
Yep.
When those supply chain issues cleared up, the price of shrimp went through the floor. And Jeff and Skip both came up to me during that time and they said, man, we just want to tell you how much we appreciate you.
Yeah.
Because I'm not trying to, you know, tell them, oh, well, the price of shrimp in the Gulf is $1.50 a pound. I want to pay you $1.50 a pound. We're going to pay a premium to them so that they can operate and be successful so that the next generation does want to do it. And I think that's something that, you know, if I'd had that conversation with my dad back in 2006, he would have mm-hmm. said, you're crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, that being able to have that product and have it consistently is worth, you know, having to take a little bit off the bottom line every year. And that's what I love about being in a family business is that, you know, if labor cost is high and food cost is high, we can have an okay year. You know, we can mm-hmm. do that. And we can do that while maintaining quality. And I think that's been something that we've tried to do.
How do you think that the oystering and shrimping and crabbing businesses, not just for Hudson's, but in the Lowcountry?
Well, I think it depends on the species that you're talking about. I mean, there was a real big downswing in blue crabs last year, mm-hmm. but everybody I've talked to this year said, man, blue crabbing's great. Shrimping, if they're out shrimping, it's been good. Weather affects shrimping a lot. I haven't figured out. Jeff and Skip seem to have a better understanding, but it's pretty confusing sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes they'll go out and they'll be like, there's no shrimp. And then, you know, they sent me a picture from last December where they've got 10,000 pounds of shrimp on the deck of the boat from one drag. You know, so the population's healthy and it's
yeah.
there, but it's just very cyclical and very hard to understand. Oysters, I think DNR does a pretty good job of managing the wild resource.
Mm-hmm.
That said, it's frustrating when you see a bunch of guys from Charleston down here picking
right.
our oysters.
But unprotected beds.
I think aquaculture is going to be a huge potential industry for South Carolina
mm-hmm.
because our growing season's so long. I mean, I talked to these guys up north in Massachusetts and places like that. It takes them 2.5 years to grow an oyster. We turned around 100,000 anyway in 9 months this year.
Wow.
Or last year.
Yeah.
So 9 months from the size of my pinky nail to 3 inches in diameter.
Is there a key to be able to do that? Is there something that you have to do, or is it just because the waters are so good where we are?
Yeah, I think most of it is because of the water. I mean, where we are, we're kind of at the confluence of the Broad River or the Chichese River, the ocean, Mackey Creek, Skull Creek. So you have all these bodies of water flowing.
Moving it.
And that's a lot of food. There's a lot of food out there for the oysters to eat. So that's an important thing that people don't realize. Like these oysters that we're putting out in cages on the bottom, it's not really farming per se because we're not feeding them.
Right.
They're eating whatever the wild oysters eat. And I think as we evolve the type of gear that we're using, I think we're going to be able to get a little more efficient. The biggest issue that we have right now is the amount of labor that's required. And also the tides. I mean, I think most people know that our tide changes. It goes from low to high every 5 hours and 50 some odd minutes. I can't remember the exact number. It's like 5 hours, 51 minutes and 26 seconds or something like that. But, you know, we have to be out there at low tide every single day to work these oysters. So every day your schedule changes by an hour. I should say Doug's schedule changes by an hour. But you know, now that the festival's over and everything, I'm hoping to get out there more. It really is a nice way to spend a morning or an afternoon. It's just a matter of getting out there and doing it.
We always talk about the workforce. You were talking about the next generation too, and that's something you've always prided yourself on, is having people who have been with you for a really long time. I know you've talked about how you'd almost like them when they start at 15 or 16 or 17 years old and then keep going because they learn so much and they know so much.
Yeah, well, I just worked with a kid today. He's a grown man now, but a guy named Joel, that shout out to Joel. He started working as a food runner when he was like 15 or 16 years old, and, you know, he became a food runner, did that great, then started doing the expediting thing, and there's nothing he doesn't know about the food, about how it's prepared, and he was out there on the deck serving today. So, but I always say that some of the best people, not all the best people, some of the best people we have are the people that started when they were 15 or 16 years old, and they've worked with us continuously throughout, and a lot of them do quite well. I mean, they end up being servers, and they have flexibility in their lives, and they can also go to college. We've got a couple of kids doing USCB right now. So,
a lot to be said about just growing up in it, right?
Yeah, and learning it from the ground up, and learning how hard it is, and then they get that serving job or bartending job, and they're like, you know, I work for this, I earn this, and I'm going to make sure I do a good job at it because I worked my tail off to get here.
Yeah,
and I love that about the restaurant business. I love that. You know, somebody that just wants to work really hard and be nice to other people, nice to customers, and learn on that, work on that knowledge, can thrive and make a really, really great living. I think that's what we're rolling out a 401k this year for anybody on our staff that wants to join, because, you know, we have some employees that are college educated. Some of them have business degrees or postgraduate degrees. And their parents put a lot of pressure on them to say, hey, is this a career?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, personally, it can be.
Mm-hmm.
If you treat it as such, it can be an actual career. Waiting tables can be an actual career and a very lucrative one.
Have you seen a change in your workforce and what you've had to do to keep them with the changing times and with this generation who seems to have a different feel to a lot of them?
Yeah, I think that this generation's different. I think that what I've noticed is that they really do value and want to work for something that they believe in. Where, you know, 30 years ago, if you told somebody they're going to make $350 on a serving shift, they would work anywhere. And I think that it's not that everybody makes $350. Just, but I think there's a lot.
Call Hudson's,
people,
apparently.
Yes, we are hiring. No, people are, I think a lot of this generation that's coming up now, they want to be proud of something. They want to be proud of where they're working. They want to feel like they're doing something good. They want to, I mean, I've got five of my employees that are helping out on the oyster farm, and they love it. And they love talking about it. They love telling the customers about it.
We're finding the same thing. We have a new fresh generation of employees that Kat's behind the camera over there, but Kat's one of a bunch, but fresh out of school, first job in Hilton Head, and it's the exact same thing. It's really believing in the community. Think of the fire rescue folks that are getting here again, right? That there's a generation that's evolved in the fire rescue department, but it's that young generation, that next generation that's just getting going, starting to believe in this island.
Yeah.
That's what matters here.
Well, it makes me want to do better by them, you know, and that, I think that's huge. Like, when employees are proud of what we're doing at the restaurant, it makes me want to do more and do better and make it a better place. And I think the same thing goes for a community.
That's exactly where I was getting ready to go. I mean, what you're putting back to the community is of greater value to the community than it is to you and the business.
Yeah.
You know, your charity, yes, it's absolutely phenomenal. And I told you the other day, Sunday, how proud I am of you and what you've done and what you've created, because, you know, the Seafood Festival was small when it started.
Oh, yeah.
But now you've got, you know, these unbelievable chefs that are coming in, James Beard chefs and bakers, and just the creativity that goes into it is what I think your employees see. And they go, wow, it's just not about being here at Hudson's.
Yeah.
It's about taking this identity, this idea, and spreading it. And
yeah. You know, what I think is really cool, I'm humbled every time we have this event, you know, and what I think is really cool for restaurants on the island is these chefs that are coming in from all over, you know, they might go eat at Hudson's, or they might go eat at the Boathouse, or they might go eat wherever. And, you know, these chefs are winning James Beard Awards, and my servers are serving them, and they're going gaga over the food.
Right.
And right, that's just a cool, like, refresher and kind of a really cool. And then, you know, they're in my kitchen working with my chefs, and they're talking about how they're impressed with what we're doing. And it's just validation, right?
Right. Oh, sure.
That we're doing things the right way, totally. And that we need to keep plugging away and keep rolling. And I think just the friends that I've made through that thing, through the festival, just the guys that come back every year, they're busy guys.
So when did you go to New York for the James Beard?
Oh, shoot. Golly, that would have had to be 2016 or 17, because we had oysters at the time.
Right, and you took a bunch of oysters up there, and y'all cooked and did all this. Do you think that trip helped drive the festival even higher?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think anytime you put yourself out there, you know, anytime you step out of your comfort zone,
right,
you're going to reap benefits from that. I mean, I'm a true believer in that. I mean, Aaron and I staged the oysters somewhere near the restaurant the night before. Aaron and I went over there, or Aaron stayed home. I went over there, got out in the boat at 4 a.m, pulled the oysters, threw them in a cooler in the back of a rented Suburban, drove 14 hours to New York and cooked the oysters that night, or wow. Shucked the oysters and served them that night in New York.
That's fabulous. That's
it's just pretty cool. I mean, I think it probably, I wish I had the quality of oysters that I have now then. I mean, they were good, mm-hmm. but the oysters that I'm growing right now are just, they're just superior to what I was doing then, just because of learning and
progression. Well, I got to tell you, I did one of those around the world oyster trays, not on Hilton Head, but somewhere else. And of course, they didn't have any locals, right. Our locals.
Right.
And I paid a lot for it.
Yeah, I bet.
Not a one. Not a one. Not a one was as good as ours.
Yeah, I think people are starting to realize that a southern oyster, especially a southern oyster from this part of Beaufort County, because we're so briny and salty here, not salty like mean salty, but physically salty.
We're very nice.
We're very nice. But I think, I mean, some of these people that kind of eat as much as it can. And the meat is going to be thinner and more watery as the water temperature goes down, which this winter we've had an amazingly cold water temperatures. The water is still around 54 degrees, mm-hmm. which usually it's about 60, 63 right now. But, and the only reason why I know all this is because we got soft shell crabs coming up very soon. We're all set up for that. But the oysters will go into a hibernative state in the winter where they'll store their protein in the form of glycogen. And that's when they get that creamy, opaque white color mm-hmm. to them. And they have a little bit more complexity of flavor. And that's kind of what they look like now. So it was pretty pretty proud Papa moment to serve those to a lot of people this weekend.
Well, I know the pride comes with the festival itself, too, in honor of your brother and what you're trying to do. I mean, explain that a little bit about what that means to you to see all these people step up and the amount that you're able to give back.
Yeah, so, I mean, just a quick Cliff's Notes version. So my brother passed away. He fought cancer from the time he was about to graduate college until he was 24. And he was an inspirational guy. I mean, he fought it with kind of the ferocity that you'd read about. And he lived his life to the fullest, even when he was going through treatment and in remission and so on and so forth. I mean, guys going skydiving and climbing mountains and doing all that. So he was pretty inspiring to me. But anyway, when he passed away, my parents started a foundation and started this little kayak festival at the restaurant, and it's kind of bloomed into this week-long event with, you know, chefs coming in from out of town, and we raise money. All the money that we raise through the festival goes to local nonprofits and anything that kind of makes Hilton Head a better place to live, work, and play, or live, work, and enjoy. I mean, we donate mm-hmm. to environmental causes and scholarship programs for kids whose parents are unable to pick them up after school. Yeah. You know, a lot of these kids would be latchkey kids, and they're getting enriching outdoor programs and things like that. So a lot of different causes, a lot of environmental causes, and volunteers in medicine, you name it. We donate to a lot of local nonprofits, and we've donated about $2 million in the last 15 years to local nonprofits, all through the proceeds from the festival, which brings me to a really interesting point. So for the very first time this year, we sent out an appeal letter to a large group of the island residents at large. And it was amazing to me how many, I think 20-something thousand people received the letter. Or we mailed 25,000 letters. I would assume that most of them hit home. It was amazing to me how few people or how many people in my direct daily orbit had no idea that this Hilton Head Island Seafood Festival was a charity event or that my family had anything to do with it. Mm-hmm. So I guess the important thing, and part of the reason why I'm so happy to be here today with you guys, is because if you don't tell people what you're doing, they don't know.
That's right.
And it's so important. I couldn't believe how many people came up to me and called me and said, we didn't know that's something that you guys did. We didn't know what all the festival benefited. And it really hit home to me that if you want people to know what you're doing and you want them to help you in that goal or in that whatever that cause is, you have to be willing to talk about it.
Yep.
Makes me feel even better about the oysters I ate this weekend then. So that's good, right?
Yeah.
No, I feel worse and worse just listening to this because I missed it this year. It's always been, especially in the last years, it's the most authentic, most amazing festival. It's a reunion of people, but just the experience of it, it's authentic. It's not a anywhere USA festival. It's so well done.
Mm-hmm. Thank
and you.
You
just leave feeling like you just experienced this low country beyond. So
I leave feeling like I've been in a car wreck.
Well, I didn't want to say that. But
I appreciate it.
We were out of town in Greenville this weekend. My son had a basketball tournament, so I was happy to be there with him. But I'm looking on Facebook at all the great photos and everybody texting me, where are you?
I missed you. I thought of you. Yeah. I did. Because we had our little reunion at the secret bar last year.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed that. But it was good. Yeah. The Friday night event was, we cut the number of ticket sales by about 150 this year because I thought it was a little too crowded last year. Mm-hmm. I thought the lines were a little confusing and everybody that went this year really, I think, noticed that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's the thing. I mean, we sent out this appeal letter and got some really nice private donations. Well, you know, that takes a little bit of the pressure off of us to sell that extra 100 tickets.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm looking forward in the future growing that side of it so that we can really make these events, like, super, super special for the people that are at them, you know, whether they're visiting or not. I mean, we had a couple... A friend of mine met a couple in line this year, and they said, yeah, man, we're from Michigan. This is why we're here. We come every year for this event, and they come to every single available event that they can get to.
Yeah, I met two couples. I can't remember where they were from, and I think this was their ninth year coming down.
That's amazing.
Just for this. Yeah, you know, it's
amazing. Yeah. I mean, that's why we started it. I mean, that's why we wanted to do something that, you know, checked all the boxes. And that's why we moved it to February, because we wanted to do it at a time that is a time of need or was a time of need for the island. I mean, February is the new March.
It is.
It's been great.
So we know you know oysters, you know shrimp, but also I saw the story about how you got your hush puppy recipe, and I do enjoy that as well.
Yeah, so that was before my times. But that's another story that my dad told me, and I thought it wasn't true. And then, you know, sure enough, the one of the guys that was the son of, anyway, the story goes, and I'll finish that. The story goes that my father and my grandfather, my dad's dad, was one of my favorite people in the history of my life. I mean, just one of the nicest, most kind, genuine human beings you would ever want to meet. And he and my dad went up to Calabash, North Carolina, because they heard that that's where the gold standard of fried seafood was, and that's kind of what they were aiming at. And the rumor was they brought a couple of really nice bottles of whiskey and ultimately coaxed one of the restaurants in Calabash to share with them the hush puppy recipe, which is still the same recipe that we use today. Now, I thought that was, again, another embellishment or a story that was made for TV or whatever, but the son of the restaurant in Calabash is now closed. The son of the original owner of the restaurant in Calabash came to the restaurant a couple years back and said, these hush puppies are exactly like the ones at my parents' restaurant because my dad gave your dad the recipe.
That's awesome.
And I said, wow. So it was true.
Yeah. Well, now you've got oyster knives, too, because I was looking and I said, I love the knife itself, but the picture, we'll put it up on screen for you. It looks a little creepy, Andrew. You know, you got a little bit too much, like, I'm sharpening my knife to stab you in the back.
I know. I saw that. I saw this. Thank you for that. I saw this at Outside Hilton, and I was like, who picked this picture?
Such a nice guy, but a pretty threatening
look. I look like I'm sharpening a knife.
Yeah, you better come to my festival or else.
Yeah. I'm going to track you down. But that was an interesting experience designing a knife. It was one of the companies that comes to the Seafood Festival. It's a company called Wolf Cutlery. They reached out to me after last year's festival and they said, hey, Andrew, do you have any interest in going in with us and designing an oyster knife? And I said, as long as I don't have to, I don't want to be involved in the marketing. I'll help you design the knife. And so we went through like 4 iterations of handle, went through 5 iterations of steel. And I learned a lot in the process. I learned that just because steel's really hard doesn't mean that it's best. So we ended up when we'd get a prototype, I'd give one to each of my best shuckers, Derwin and Jay, at the restaurant. And I said, beat the heck out of this thing. I want you to shuck as many oysters as you can. And really, it's an amazing proving ground because if you're shucking 2,000 oysters a day, that's more than most people are going to shuck in their whole life with the knife. So the first iteration of steel, it broke in 2 days. The second iteration, it broke in 4 days. The third iteration, I said, well, are you going harder or are you going, I think maybe we want to go a little bit more flexible, but keep it nice and hard. And sure enough, they went with a Japanese steel that had a little bit, if you touch the tip of that blade on that knife, you can see it just barely move just a little bit. Those knives that were the last iteration of steel have been in process at the restaurant for 3.5 months, and they look like they're brand new.
Wow.
Pretty cool.
That's awesome. I've got to get one.
I'll get you guys one. And the cool thing is that, I never did it, like with the oysters, you never got into it because I wanted to get rich. They actually said that they would make a donation of X for each knife that they sell to the foundation. Mm-hmm. And I ended up getting a handsome check after Christmas from them, and that went to good use for the foundation and the festival. But, just a really neat project and something that I would do again. I mean, I learned a lot, and I enjoyed kind of the design process.
Well, we learned a lot today and a lot about oysters and shrimp and things, but we do like to play a game now.
Oh, cool. I love games. So, here we go. Awesome.
We always like to do a little something different, but we thought you're here, so you get to answer some questions about these two.
This case. So, all right. I don't know simple, how good I'm
simple
do
choices,
this.
Either or, this is all we're going with. Who do you think would be the best server between the two of these two?
Oh, God, put me on the spot. Mm. I'm gonna go with Alan because he's been there. He knows the restaurant. He's been around for a long, long time.
All right. Well, I won't even tell you about the Casabianca days when I was a busboy.
Oh, that's nice, nice. The only reason why I say Alan is Alan's family, his brother, his nephews, everybody. They've been around the restaurant a lot over the years, and
I would have picked them too. Next question, I would have picked them too.
So my biggest problem being remembering the order.
Now we're not really that big in upselling at the restaurant. We want people to get what they get. Mark, I think you would be really good.
Everyone would be leaving with an oyster knife.
That's everybody. Right. I like it. I think Mark would be really good at telling the story and framing the
fries to go and an oyster knife upsell after they thought they were closing the tab.
So then the next question would be, who'd be the best shrimper between the two of these?
Oh man, I gotta go with Mark now. Oh,
he just feels bad.
I gotta go with Mark now.
Thank you.
I don't know. I mean,
that was a pity choice. Really.
I wouldn't put that. I mean, guys, that is a rough way to make a living.
Yeah, my brother did it one summer, and I think he lasted. Well, I'm sorry. During one summer. He did it for about a week and a half, 2 weeks, because I can't do this. It was awful.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's tough. When those boats get those outriggers down and it gets rough and they're pitching and rolling, like I don't get seasick.
Right.
And I get seasick on those boats.
Yeah. I'll vote against myself. I spent a lot of time with Larry Toomer through the years and just saw what he went through as a commercial fisherman, business owner, and just keeping the crew together. So I would vote against myself in that line. Yeah. It's just such incredible respect for it.
Yeah, me too, man. Yeah. I mean, you want to talk about just Some tough dudes. Some tough dudes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Remember how it, you know, how it got to your plate, and remember the people that put it there.
I think
the answer is E. None of the above.
I will say this about the shrimping thing, and what, to your point, we've really been trying to work with our staff, especially the back of the house staff, on, you know, being super respectful of, you know, these ingredients and understanding where they come from, because a lot of times back of the house employees are just like, here, I got a piece of fish, I got to cook it.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, we got people there at 4:30, 5:30 in the morning filleting fish and peeling and deveining shrimp, and that's just the end of the journey. I mean, this shrimp, you know, they had to get caught, bycatch sorted, headed, iced, delivered to the restaurant. So
whole life cycle.
It's a lot that goes into it.
Yeah, absolutely. So which
a lot
one
of labor.
These, which one of these guys here on the desert island who could help you survive for a while?
Good Lord, man.
We both knew you were going to get tough questions.
Like both of them.
There you go. See, that was much better.
I need the cheerleader, and I need somebody to keep me grounded.
Just what you need on a desert island is a cheerleader. So that's really important.
I mean that in a nice way.
Also, but you heard what
said. Not cheerleader like with the skirts and everything.
Right?
I mean, the morale guy.
Yeah. No, the morale guy. You're right. I was just about to tell you, though, to be just humbled about it. I think you set the bar as a business owner, as an entrepreneur, as a community-spirited guy. You know, it's I've known of you and known you for a lot of years, so... but we appreciate you.
I really appreciate you
and your family and everything you do. And you do set the bar for us.
You know, there's a saying out there, service is above you, leadership is beyond you. Well, you're all about the service.
Yeah, I mean, I never learned to sit still and just, you know, kind of, watch other people do. I've always been kind of the person that I've always been very eager to please. So I enjoy it. And that means a lot coming from you.
You have pleased us by being here today. Made a big difference for everybody. And Mark will get over the cheerleader outfit later.
No.
But that's fine. So thank you so much for joining the Hilton Head podcast, Tonham Hilton Head podcast. Still need a name. We'll go on social media. Tell us what you think the name of this one should be. Thank you to Andrew Carmines, for Alan, for Mark. I'm Andrew Davis, and we'll be back with you again next month.